This week on Hyperspace Broadcast, we follow the exploits of a foolish samurai warrior as he tries to undo the future that is Aku. Welcome to Hyperspace Broadcast once again, the podcast where two real friends watch a program broadcast on Toonami and try to determine if it's worth revisiting. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And this week we're covering the first season of Samurai Jack, that is episodes 1 through 13. Also, I feel for some reason like I need to clarify that the show is not called Hyperspace Broadcast once again. It is Hyperspace Broadcast, in case you're confused by my weird introduction.
Sure.
So, Samurai Jack, Peter, let's talk about it a little bit.
Sure.
Before we really get into things. This is a show that I barely watched, but I remember very distinctly, purely from the commercials and the rap, like end credits music
that rap played during the promos.
Okay, sure.
The end credits.
Yeah.
But, you know, rhyming-ish. I remember the show pretty well. I didn't watch all of it. I was very into the introduction of the show. Or rather, like, when they were, like, hyping the premiere.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And it was very hyped. And I remember seeing a behind-the-scenes kind of thing that they showed with it that we actually just watched. It's on YouTube. It's from 2001. It's a Samurai Jack behind the scenes.
Yeah, we'll certainly link it.
Sure. And I remember seeing that, and I remember like kind of getting an appreciation for like how goddamn pretty the backgrounds are. It's mm-hmm. Like, oh, this is like hand painted and whatever, like watercolors and shit. As a little kid, you know, I didn't really understand,
and also,
but it
like,
seemed cool.
Yeah, also like right at the start of when everything was becoming generally done on computers.
Yeah.
It was still being, you know, hands made, which is pretty impressive. Gendy Tartakovsky. Yeah, that's it. Gendy Tartakovsky, whose name I'm worried that I'm going to mispronounce, is the creator of this show. It was a follow-up to Dexter's Lab, which is obviously a rather different show. In scouring the Wikipedia page for this show in order to get some interesting information about it to share with all of you, I stumbled across the quote that I think best summarizes the process of how this show was made, which is a quote from a Cartoon Network executive Mike Lazo, who remembers the pitch process as Tartakovsky said, "Hey, remember David Carradine in Kung Fu? Wasn't that cool?" And Lazo responded, "Yeah, that's really cool." And that's it. That was the pitch. Which is amazing.
That sounds like Mike Lazo's situation. That's
sure.
That's great.
Samurai Jack draws influences from a lot of different media. Namely, a lot of like Hollywood classic movies. Lawrence of Arabia is mentioned. Frank Miller comics, specifically Ronin, which is kind of the same story.
Yeah, right.
And that's also
the exact same.
Also written by Frank Miller, you know, before he went crazy. So that's nice. And a lot of 1970s movies are also kind of mixed in here. One thing about the process
forget
of
it Jack
show.
It's Chinatown. I haven't seen that
forget
yet,
it Jack
sure
it's Aku
happen.
Town I'm guessing is the translation of that. So another interesting thing is that the process, basically they didn't write scripts but instead wrote an outline and then kind of gave it to the storyboard people so that they could make the storyboards and write the script around that to make it a very visual cartoon. Which
and
it's
stark contrast to Pokemon, a show that will never shut the fuck up. We finally get a show that is like beautiful and quiet.
Yes, very quiet.
Yeah, very minimal dialogue. You will, I mean, you know, It's not always minimal dialogue, but compared to Pokemon, compared to most kids shows,
compared to like especially coming from this to this from Pokemon is crazy. Like,
yeah,
it is such a whiplash of difference, I guess, with it's the slight cruel. Speed bump of Castlevania, but still, like, oh my god, this show is so much better than Pokemon. It's insane. But the synopsis, in case you're not familiar with Samurai Jack, is pretty much the premise of the show also. So long ago in a distant land, as Aku says to start every episode, Aku, the shape-shifting spirit of darkness, was defeated by a samurai wielding a magic katana. Aku survived, and years later, due to a solar eclipse, he rose again, attacked the kingdom ruled by the samurai who defeated him and captured him and enslaved pretty much everyone that the king ruled over. Fortunately, the king and queen have a son who they send out to basically take a trip around the world, learning different martial skills from all over the place. And eventually he finds his way back home, kind of reclaims his birthright, which is the katana, and fights Aku. Now, Aku, on, you know, death's door, I guess, nearly defeated by the samurai, opens a portal, sends him into the future, where Aku has ruled the world for, you know, God knows how long. Like, we're not really given any kind of...
Where Aku's rule is law.
Yeah, right, right. And in this world, the samurai, who is thus far nameless, is accosted by a group of slang-talking youths who keep referring to him as Jack as a slang term, so he takes the name Jack and basically sets off on an adventure to defeat Aku slash return to the past so he can undo all of the crap that Aku did over all these years.
Yeah, and so basically every episode is like, it's either Jack is on some mission to do something noble, like he is tasked to complete some noble quest, or he is doing a quest or searching for some secret artifact in order to gain the power to go back in time.
Mm-hmm. It very much is Kung Fu, if you're familiar with that at all. It's, you know, it's a guy basically wandering around, taking on, like, good causes with technically an end goal in sight, but individual episodes, whether or not they, you know, really meet that end goal, it's kind of 50-50 split for the first season anyway. You know, half the time it's him trying to defeat Aku or find some way to go back in time, and the other half the time it's kind of him, you know, stumbling across a community and helping it out or finding that there's something wrong with it and dealing with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty interesting show, but there's not, I mean, again, there's not much plot to go through. So I think we should just jump right into Zeniths and Nadirs. Peter, do you want to start with that? What was your favorite episode?
Yeah, sure. My favorite episode was episode 3, which, you know what? It's entitled 3 in Roman numerals.
Yeah, which is super easy to do now, but will get annoying as hell once we get to, like, season 4.
Yeah. Every episode is just Roman numerals.
Yeah, the Roman numeral of the episode number.
The first 3 episodes of Samurai Jack are pretty much directly in sequence to each other.
Yeah, they aired as a movie for the premiere.
Yep. Yeah, as a TV movie where, you know, Jack goes through all the training, becomes an adult, fights Aku, is flung into the future. He meets some, like, dog people, which are just, like, because, like, the right. world, it's so far in the future that there are flying cars everywhere. Aku is, like, open spaceports to Earth.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so they're totally aliens. Like, cyberpunk.
Yeah. And so he meets these bipedal little dogs who are adorable.
And have various, like, English Isles accents as well.
Yeah. Including a Scottish,
I guess,
Scottish,
British Isles.
In the third episode, basically, he finds out that they were digging archaeological digs and discovered, like, some kind of, like, power crystals or something. And Aku took control of them and forced them basically into slave labor to dig up these crystals and serve them to Aku.
Mm-hmm.
Jack is hired by them to repel Aku's evil forces and liberate them. And so the third episode here, Aku visits the base, and then suddenly this army of, like, spider drones are coming into attack, and they all have, like, razor-sharp, like, scythe hands.
Yeah, they're like bugs, basically.
Yeah, and there's hundreds of them.
Yeah, thousands. Literally, there's a shot of, like, them coming over the horizon, and it's just this entire valley filling with black all these drones, you know, form, like, a mass.
And so this episode is spent preparing to defend this base. So they use, like, construction equipment to dig trenches. They use the crystals to make into blades and to arrowheads. And they kind of, like, dig these trenches and put these blades throughout. And I really enjoyed just something about, like, the whole, like, preparation and defense aspect of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it also kind of reminded me of Seven Samurai.
Sure, yeah.
The Akira Kurosawa film, which is, like, all about kind of mounting a defense against these bandits, just because it's, like, the noble thing to do. And it's this whole build-up until this final battle where they come in, and it's finally, like, time to take them on. And this, like, the episode is spent building it up, and then you get this battle, and it is a fucking crazy battle. It is huge, and it's also funny to me because it's the dogs pretty much don't help at all. Like, they help set up.
Yeah, they kind of just peace out and let Jack do it.
They are not present in the actual battle, and it is just Jack versus hundreds of robots. And it's grueling. Like, it's intense. It's just constantly fighting them, constantly using these different tricks that they have set up, these different traps. But even that isn't enough. And something I really liked about this episode is just, like, it's you kind of feel exhausted with Jack, but it doesn't compromise the action's pacing.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't become, like, overly repetitive either. You know, whereas, like, you know, in other shows, it might be like, well, this battle's taking fucking forever. So I guess I get what the character's feeling like. It's super long and annoying. Well, and in this case, it's handled in such a way that it's just like, okay, yeah, like, he's getting beat up. He's taking these monsters, these robots, I should say, on. Because sure, everything in this is not a monster, but actually a robot.
Everything is a robot. Because then they can be safely dismembered, and you can have, like, oil that is, you know, stand-in blood, but it's not too violent for the kids. You know.
It is awesome, too, because he cuts up robots in the end. He's just, like, screaming, and he's, like, cut up a bit, wounded, and just attacking these robots and getting covered in oil. And it just kind of ends in this fucking screaming crazy man covered in oil.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to say about the fight, and maybe why it doesn't get to feel like exhausting just from the sense of, okay, mm-hmm. I get it, they're fighting, is that the show is really good at just showing things in a way that I feel like a lot of shows don't, if that makes sense. Like, there's a pretty consistent use of, like, split screen. And I feel like they just vary the visuals of the fights a lot.
Yeah, it's in very a way comic that makes book-esque. It look,
yeah, absolutely.
And the screen will be divided into panels, like, very often in action mm-hmm. scenes. And it's a really cool little effect they do.
Yeah, but and the other thing about this is that, as a result, there's pretty infrequently repeat animation. Of course, you know, you say, oh, it's basically an episode-long fight, and my first thought is Dragon Ball Z.
Sure.
And it is actually a fight that takes place over the course of an episode. It's not a bunch of repeat animation and then characters, you know, standing around talking at each other about how strong they are. Like,
yeah, it's an episode-long fight.
It's just Jack cutting up robots.
It's not a season-long fight.
Right.
So, yeah, and I just thought that episode was fantastic. Like, it's action on that level, and especially in, like, an American cartoon of the time, was not something I'd really expected to see, and it was really cool. What was your zenith?
Yeah, my zenith was episode 7, titled VII, in which a bunch of robot Vikings attack a tower and are destroyed with just hail of, like, just thousands of arrows, basically. So the opening part of this episode is just this battle that doesn't involve Jack. It doesn't involve any characters that we're familiar with at all. Mm-hmm. And it goes on for a while, but it's still to the point where I was like, I feel like we're watching a different show here.
Yeah.
Almost. But of course, much like the fight in the episode you were talking about, it's, you know, it looks great and it doesn't really feel that repetitive. Anyway, this is all set up because the leader of this robot Viking army, who is just a normal Viking, is now on this ship that Jack happens to be traveling on, talking about how he sacrificed an entire army in order to get to this tower, where atop it there is a pool that will grant you one wish, and also, though, there are three archers that guard it that are blind. Mm-hmm. And are, you know, you can't stop them, you can't beat them. So you can't get to the pool.
And the archers have this kind of, like, Egyptian jackal design.
Yeah, yeah, they
really
look like jackals, certainly.
Yeah.
So anyway, naturally, Jack hears this. He goes to find this tower. And the episode that comes out of that, like, this is such a bare bones, like, simple plot.
Yeah.
It is literally Jack is trying to get to the top of a tower. That's it. And the thing about this show for me, like, this episode exemplifies what I get out of the show, which is amazing visuals and, frankly, really interesting cinematography, which I'm not sure if that's really the right word for animation, but just the shot construction of this show is so beautiful, and I feel like it's stuff that I never see, especially in cartoons of this time. You know, like, yeah. Scooby-Doo isn't doing this shit. There's one shot in particular that stands out to me where Jack is just walking through this snowy wood, and it's a long shot from an extreme high angle, and it's just this beautiful shot where nothing's really happening. It's just Jack walking across the frame with the sounds of this forest, and that's it. But there's something so beautiful and so unique about it it's like an image that I can't get away from.
Something I really like about the show is that they have these beautiful painted landscapes, and they just give you time, you know, they give you time to just kind of be like, you soak it in.
Yeah, to notice the landscapes, certainly.
And it's totally antithetical to, like, how kids' cartoons were made back then, and probably are still made, where it's like,
yeah, sure,
you constantly have things happening, characters are always talking, action's always happening.
Yeah, it's very frenetic.
And in this case, it's just like, no, we're going to take a time.
Well, what's interesting is that the show, I feel like, really manages to effectively leapfrog between being extremely kinetic and crazy with the action scenes, and then, like, have these slow moments that, you know, again, not much is happening, but it's really well done. The other thing about this episode that is really the best part of it, and the point where I realize, like, in my notes I literally have, I'm awed by this show, is the sequence where Jack realizes that the only way that he can defeat these archers is basically by operating on their level. So he blindfolds himself, and we're treated to a thing that is so weird to even say, because I realize how contradictory it is, but we're given this visual approximation of blindness that is like, you know, it starts out and it's just a black screen, and then we kind of hear noises, like individual noises from the soundscape, and they'll kind of, like, animation of, say, a deer eating grass will kind of float into frame, and then, you know, it'll float out and we'll get another thing, like a bird chirping, for example. And it goes on like this for a while. And again, like, it's just so great to watch. Like, I don't... it looks amazing. It's this great visualization of this concept. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that I feel like we don't or really haven't seen in any of the other shows we've watched for this podcast. Like, it's I don't know. It feels sophisticated in a way.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there are some episodes that are less good. What's your least favorite episode of this block? Or this season, I suppose.
My least favorite episode is episode 5, or V, of course. This is an episode where Jack is basically walking through the woods and is attacked by these giant, you know, Aku mantis robots. And he accidentally leads them into a clearing in the forest where these scientists are working on a secret rocket project. And the robots accidentally like blow up, part of their project and set them back.
Yeah, well, the robots basically uncover it. Like, one of them manages to escape to alert Aku of these people trying to leave his domain.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so, now they have a time limit on their project. They have to get out before Aku's forces come in and destroy them. And so you meet all these, like, kooky scientist characters, and they try to, they build Jack a spacesuit so he can fight in space to fight off, like, the defense forces.
Yeah, the orbital guard, I believe they're referred to as.
And in return, they will, use some relativity trick to send Jack back in time try to do that.
Yeah, something like that. It's like, you get in this escape pod as we're going to light speed, and you'll go back in time, basically.
And what happens is Jack goes up in space, he flies around and fights guys, and then at the last minute, when they're about to go to light speed, Jack notices there's a risk in that the enemies are going to do a final attack and they'll probably kill the scientists. So he decides to abandon his time travel chair and go help his friends and destroy the enemies. What I didn't like about this episode is that I found it kind of boring compared to some of the others. The episode relies more on like dialogue with the scientist characters, who I kind of found obnoxious and not super interesting. They're just kind of generic scientists in spacesuits. And, the climax of the episode is Jack battling robots in space in like a jetpack spacesuit. But even that was just kind of like, didn't feel worth it.
Which sounds cooler than it is, frankly, I would say.
Absolutely. I also thought it was just kind of annoying to have like time travel be the goal of this episode. I kind of have mixed feelings about this, because it's like, of course, you want to have
the thing.
Time
travel is
the goal of Jack. Like, that's the whole point. He wants to go back in time and stop Aku. But
I think the problem here, if I can cut in, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be stepping on your thing, but like, I think the problem here is, unlike a lot of the other times where it seems like Jack may be able to go back in time, this is an episode where very quickly it's established that if he does this thing, he will go back in time, period.
Yeah.
And then basically the reason he doesn't is because he's too noble to, take a 1 in 300 chance of the scientists getting hit by this giant assembly of robot wasps that form into a huge gun. He has to stop the wasp gun because a 1 in 300 chance is too much of a chance, basically. And like, I get it. I understand. Yeah. They're illustrating how noble Jack is, etc. But I think the annoying thing is that he specifically chooses not to go back based on, like, couldn't it have been like a 1 in 50 chance?
Yeah, right. It's like, that's still pretty good odds that you're not gonna get hit.
1 in 300 is pretty nuts. Like, I'd take those odds.
And maybe you can make your arguments of like, well, Jack wouldn't think like this, he wouldn't think that about time travel.
Well, sure,
this way.
Sure, yeah,
but thinking on it, it's like, okay, well, either they're gonna die and you're gonna be stuck in the future, or you're going to go back in time and you're going to basically kill them anyway by changing the future.
Yeah, you're going to butterfly effect their asses out of existence.
Which, maybe the show, they didn't want to go
Well, sure, no, that's kind of grim. the idea that all of these nice characters that Jack meets along the way are all effectively doomed if Jack reaches his goal.
But still, like, the fact that it's like, yes, it's a surefire thing that if Jack does this right, he's going to get his goal. And it's like, of course that means it's not going to happen. So,
yeah, and it's...
There's no twist, there's no exciting plot anything. Like, I just know what's going to happen.
I mean, the thing is, too, like, there are a couple of other episodes that center around Jack trying to acquire an item to, like, basically get a wish or a magic spell that puts him back where he came from as far as time. That was a weird way to phrase that. But... The thing is, most of those rely on some kind of legend or some kind of sort of twist. I mean, in the episode that I talked about as my favorite, the well that grants wishes, it turns out, basically is like a curse as well. It's not just a magic wishing well that you get what you want and everything's great. It's a cursed well where the last people to make a wish from it are the blind archers that have been defending it for however long. Their wish to be the greatest warriors in the world, and they were granted that wish by defending the well forever, basically. So, like, there's that example. There's another example where Jack travels across the deserts with this woman who turns out to be Aku, and then Aku destroys the thing that could have put Jack back in time. And those are, like, things where there's kind of a twist at the end that pulls a thing just out of Jack's reach.
Right. And in this case...
Or forces him to make a real decision. In this case, it doesn't feel like that as much.
Also, one last note, Jack falls from orbit and just crash lands on Earth in a spacesuit. And it's like, he basically just comes out of that unscathed. And it's like, that's gotta be one fucking strong spacesuit.
Yeah, sure, dude. It's like Halo Reach.
I can stretch my imagination for Halo 3, but come on. Like, this show takes itself pretty seriously.
That was a little that was a little weird, I guess.
So what was your nadir?
This would be episode 12. I'm not going to bother doing the Roman numeral joke. In this episode, it's basically like a gangster movie, kind of Goodfellas-esque. And it starts with Jack stopping a bunch of robot mobsters from shooting up a club, which is pretty awesome. He then is invited to join the gang of these very short mobster guys and initially refuses because they're engaging in criminal activity, which obviously Jack wouldn't do because he's noble. But then he realizes that they work directly for Aku and is like, well, okay, I'll join your organization and then I'll get a meeting with Aku and I'll destroy him and all this will be over. So, you know, this plays out basically how I'd expect. There is a, there's like a magic item that they need to steal that Aku couldn't steal for some reason, that controls all the water in the world that they're going to give Aku as a gift, etc. You know, Jack fights Aku, but the mobsters hit him over the head, and basically knock him out because they think he's just gone crazy because he's gone from
the last minute before Jack delivers the final blow to Aku that would, you know, end everything.
Yeah, sure.
And they're just like, Jack, you're going crazy. We're going to hit you over the head.
I mean, it makes sense to me that they would think he'd gone nuts, given that he'd seemed totally loyal and now suddenly is attacking the ultimate evil, unkillable ruler of the world.
Right. I would want to stop that happening. Yeah, at least to make probably myself look good.
Yeah, right. But anyway, this episode ends with the mobsters. It turns out one of them actually didn't give the jewel to Aku in the confusion, and Jack's like, oh, I'll take this back to where it's supposed to go. And the mobsters are like, you know what? We've had a change of heart. Just give it to us and we'll do that. We'll start a new life and that'll be our first, straight job. And so he does. He leaves and they're just like, what a sucker, and start selling water to people at crazy inflated prices. And that's the episode's end. So there's two things I don't like particularly about this episode. One is that it is an episode that is so consistently talked through by the main mobster.
Yeah,
and to be fair, yeah, and it, you know, he has like a goofy voice and everything, and for the most part it's fine, but again, like, I feel like it's kind of antithetical to the stuff that I really like about the show, which is the quiet contemplative moments of visual stuff. And there's, of course, beautiful visuals in this episode too, but there's also usually someone talking over them. Now, to be fair, that makes sense because, like, Goodfellas, for example, there's constant narration in that movie. It's one of the big things about it. So I can kind of get why they would have sort of pseudo-narration over a lot of this, but it doesn't really work for me, honestly. The other thing is, you know, I'm not usually a person to be bugged by something like this, but it's kind of a kick in the nuts that the mobsters end up getting what they want in the end after lying to Jack, and then they're just selling water for like $3,000 an ounce.
Right. It's just like, well, that's a fucked up ending.
Like, you know, it's this weird thing where I'm not really sure what I would have preferred, because obviously I was like, okay, of course these fucking mobsters are gonna have a change of heart because Jack's so good, and that's like,
you probably would have liked that less.
Yeah, I would have, certainly. No, that's eye rolling stuff for sure, but like, still, there's something kind of weird about this show just letting the bad guys win, sort of. I do, that all said, one of my favorite moments in this episode is when the mobsters show up at like Aku's audience chamber. Just the expression on Aku's face when he realizes who they are is amazing, because he looks so fucking
he
annoyed.
Just rolls his like, eyes immediately.
Yeah, it's like, oh god, these idiots. Yeah, so I love that. I like Aku a lot in general. So since this is one of our episodes where we don't really have a synopsis to talk about, we're going to do honorable mentions as well. And I guess I'll just go right into mine, which would be episode 13, which is an episode in which, you know, this is another one where there's a lot of dialogue. But what's fun about it is it's an episode where Aku is annoyed that little kids are playing basically Samurai Jack beats Aku, and everyone wants to be Jack, and no one wants to be Aku because he always loses. And Aku's like, all right, the best way to solve this is to gather all the children into this stadium and tell them stories where I'm the hero and Jack is the villain in order to convert them to my side, basically. So basically, this is an episode where it's just Aku the whole time, and I love Aku. Like, Aku is really funny. he just, I don't know, like, the voice is great, his expressions are great. The very idea that he gathers a bunch of kids into a huge stadium with, like, TVs just playing pictures of like cute critters, and then he
slightly
shows up
distorted
and he doesn't
pictures
even...
of like cutesy looking almost like Sanrio kind of
Hello Kitty
kind of shit.
Exactly.
But it's slightly distorted, so it's just like disturbing and silent. And all the kids walk in and they're just like blank, like stone face, just like, what the fuck's happening?
And then really my favorite part about it is Aku shows up and he hasn't modified himself to look less evil or threatening at all. He's just exactly how he normally looks, like speaking in his normal voice. And he starts telling these kids, you know, he starts with some story about how there was this hero that saved the planet and gave them all food to eat. And then it's revealed at the end that the hero was Aku. Yeah. Which is a pretty good visual of this like Greek hero looking guy pulling off his helmet and it's just Aku's head under it. But then he quickly transitions to telling modified versions of fairy tales, where he is usually the protagonist. And, you know, the first one of these is Little Red Riding Hood, where he's Red Riding Hood. And in the end, he destroys the wolf courtesy of his laser eyes and superior fighting skills.
The wolf attacks Little Red Hood, not knowing that she had laser eye beams, is a direct quote.
Yeah. Yeah, and then and thus Little Red Hood was victorious after she defeats the wolf, which for some reason is hilarious to me. And I mean, I could go on, but suffice to say, he tells more fairy tales and they start to get like blurred together, seemingly as his memory of the stories themselves becomes more and more vague.
And he also starts including Samurai Jack as a villain in the stories.
Yeah, right, and which is funny.
The version
of
Samurai Jack is just this fucking crazy version of him. Like in the
yeah, Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Jack is Goldilocks, but he destroys the bear's house for no reason.
He just comes in and he goes, "Yeah, porridge." It's fucking amazing.
Oh god. Yeah, it's like he ate all the porridge. He didn't care if it was too cold or too hot. Yeah, and eventually all these kids are, you know, questioning details of his stories, and he kind of just gives up and is like, you know, once there was a great wizard named Aku and this stupid samurai, and Aku beat him, and that's it. And then he leaves, and the kids, you know, tell their own story of Jack being a good character, etc. And I love this episode just on a conceptual level, because for some reason, to me, there are few things funnier in shows like this than crazy villains trying to seem really nice. Yeah. And it's, you know, of course, it's funny how bad Aku is at it, and how his fairy tales eventually just become this weird blending of like three or more all put together.
It just
in this way that's like really bizarre and just kind of goes off the deep end.
This ultimate evil character trying to appeal to children is pretty fantastic.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. It's great. So, and you know, I like Aku is usually good in small doses because most of the time he doesn't really show up a whole hell of a lot. And when he does, he'll show up for like a moment.
And he'll laugh.
But yeah, but here we have an entire episode of Aku and it doesn't feel over long. Like I never got tired of Aku, which is great because, again, I love Aku. He's hilarious. Just seeing that in the future there are billboards of Aku like eating a sandwich and drinking a cola that's Aku cola and like peering down, you know, as though he's looking down at the people looking at the billboard. Oh, like, that's right, I drink Aku cola. Like, there's something about it that's so funny.
And you gotta
to
say
me.
Man, Aku for a fucking ancient demon is very industrious. He takes over the world and is just like, I'm making spaceports, I'm putting my face on brands for Coca-Cola and sandwiches.
Aku is, you know, he's a real go-getter, frankly. Like, he's done a lot in however long it's been, and I'm impressed by him. I don't know. Aku's fun. What's your honorable mention, Peter?
My honorable mention was episode 11. This is an episode which introduced what I understand to be a reoccurring character, the Scotsman.
Oh, shit. Oh, yeah. Really?
I think he recurs throughout the whole series. No. The Scotsman is a Scotsman in that he's a
very stereotypical Scotsman.
He is a giant man with red hair with a bagpipe. Basically, this episode starts with Samurai Jack is walking across this super narrow bridge that goes across this massive misty chasm that you can't see across at all. And it's this
and you can't see the bottom of, like, he sleeps on the bridge one night because it's taken him a day to cross to where
ridiculous.
He even is, so it's super hugely long.
One day he just hears bagpipes and they come closer and closer and closer until the Scotsman reveals himself coming the opposite direction, and he kind of just has to they basically just get in an argument about whether which one should get out of the way so the other can move across.
Yeah, and the bridge is narrow, so neither of them want to risk potentially falling over the side to move out of the way.
And the Scotsman, who, you know, wields a bagpipe, a claymore, and a machine gun leg, and wears a kilt. He is voiced by John DiMaggio, the voice of Bender, which you can hear.
Of course.
I instantly picked it up. And he's just like starts constantly insulting Jack, in a way I found it pretty satisfying. This is a comparably pretty dialogue heavy episode.
That's true. There are some that are, certainly, and it's not necessarily a bad thing.
And in this case, the Scotsman is just starts tearing Jack apart, just like making fun of him for his like his robes and his basket hat and his sword being puny compared to his cool claymore. And Jack actually just starts to get pissed off, which is kind of funny. He's like usually so calm and composed, and it's like eventually just his insults get to him. They fight for what seems to be, I think, 3 days.
Yeah, right. No, they fight for so long that both of them are too exhausted to even lift their swords. So
they're just like barely throwing insults at each other. When all of a sudden these like bounty hunters hired by a coup that are basically Southerner stereotypes. One is like a pig wearing a sheriff's one uniform who just goes,
one is an incomprehensible pig.
Which I found fucking hilarious.
And then the other is just a... I will talk a little bit about this episode after, but continue.
Well, they start getting hunted by them. They get like they throw these handcuffs at them and handcuff the two of them together. And then, oh, you've got a plot for an episode. These two characters who hate each other are stuck together.
Yep, classic. I do think you should not overlook the fact that these bounty hunters initially approach them on two gigantic wheeled vehicles that take up the entirety of the bridge, racing from both sides, and then as they jump over, the vehicles just crash into each other and explode.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Like, there's no attempt made to stop or slow down. I don't know.
And so, they land and they're hunted by these guys, including, like, robot crocodiles who are holding pet robot crocodiles.
Robot crocodiles controlled by a crocodile man that later turns out to be a robot because he gets cut in half.
Yeah, again, also another reoccurring theme in this show. If an enemy's getting attacked, they're probably a robot. Even though they seem completely sapient.
Even if they look totally non-robotic.
They seem completely intelligent and wise, but no, they're a robot, dude. It's okay. It's okay to cut him above.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Don't worry, kids.
I just like the Scotsman. I like he's basically a complete and utter fucking foil to Jack in every way, but they also have this similar relation of just being like, they're both like bounties for a coup.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's fun too, the scene where the Scotsman is bragging about how he has the biggest bounty on his head ever, and Jack's like, no you don't, I do. And then they go into this kind of like bayou city where all these caricature Southerns live, and there's just wanted posters with Jack's face everywhere. And the Scotsman is like so irritated that there is someone more wanted than him.
Yeah, I found it to be a fun episode.
Some funny stuff.
And I'm excited for that character to come back.
Oh, yeah. I had no idea he was a recurring character, so that will certainly be fun, especially now that he and Jack are like battle brothers. It's going to be fun to have him back. I will say that there were moments of this episode where I was like, I feel like I maybe shouldn't be laughing at this. In
classist terms against Southern stereotypes.
Yeah, the pig's whole joke is that he's just an incomprehensible Southern babble, or they're like swilling moonshine,
I guess. But it's, I don't know. It's not directly referencing the South, I guess, in terms of it's on the bayou or whatever.
Yeah, it's pretty.
I don't find it that bad. I get the indication, or the, you know, you don't want to be totally shitty to people from the South just because they're from the South and treat them like they're idiots.
Yeah.
Which is a super common thing.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Everyday culture. But, you know, when you make it a pig.
Well, yeah, no. And don't get me wrong, like, I was not super put off by this. This wasn't me, like, being, you know, clutching my pearls necessarily. I was just, there was a part of me halfway through, I was like, I feel a little bad just laughing at this character who's like, you know, straight out of Smokey and the Bandit, but he's a pig and he's babbling incomprehensibly.
I did find the babbling very funny, though. just because it sounded funny.
It is quite hilarious,
just
frankly.
Some character just going up and going, it's just...
yeah, shouting orders, and that is great. And also, really, the scene where it's revealed that there's an alligator man controlling alligators.
Also...
there's something about it that's so bizarre that it's hilarious.
Well, shit, I think it's about time for a break, isn't it?
It certainly is. When we get back, we'll talk about our thoughts in the series, or I guess the first season, really. And then talk about where we're going to be watching for a minisode. And also a bet.
It is time for me to rid myself of this menace once and for all. Goodbye, old friend.
Samurai Jack will return in a moment. Hey, everyone. Who else would it be? It's Michael, given some acknowledgments. Our opening and closing music is, as always, Vapor Diving by Anatech, and the music for the bumpers is Monkeys, also by Anatech. You can find more of their music on SoundCloud. Rights were secured through Jamendo. Our next full episode, where we cover the second season of Samurai Jack, will release November 21st, and next week, catch our minisode where we discuss the Castle of Cagliostro. As always, you can submit a topic or show suggestion for our minisodes via DM on facebook.com/HBpod, Twitter @HBpod, or our email, hyperspacebroadcastpod@gmail.com.
At last, after all these years, a worthy opponent.
Enough of this pointless battle. I will continue to fight you no more.
And now, back to Samurai Jack. All right, we're back. And let's talk about what we thought of season one of Samurai Jack. Peter, do you want to start with that?
Sure.
And I'll chime in.
Watching Samurai Jack now, compared to when I was a kid, I kind of have... not to sound like all pretentious, but I feel like I have a more refined sense of artistic quality.
Well, yeah, you're not a 12-year-old.
And seeing it now, like, noticing that it's like, oh, this show is fucking beautiful. Like, it's just incredible, these visuals. The painted backgrounds are gorgeous, and, like, the character design and the overall, like, style of the show, I consider to be top-notch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you look at, like, the style of the aliens and their kind of design... the landscapes are just incredible, and they range from just like kind of traditional, kind of beautiful landscapes to more like twisted and weird future landscapes that are all
like weird cityscapes and
like just like the colors used is like I love like the palettes of the colors in the first episode. You get this moment where you see the kingdom that when Aku is originally invading back in the past, and it's like all these kind of like sunset colors. And then you cut to the future where it's peaceful and like, you know, ancient Japan, and Aku starts invading, and the peaceful colors are like, you know, green, white, and very like calm. And then when Aku appears, everything slowly starts to turn as if the sun is setting, and everything turns like orange and red and black. And there's something about that, like, and that just kind of sets the tone for the whole show of just like something about their use of color I found incredible. Like I mentioned before, it's nice to have a show where characters are quiet, and
yes.
I think because of that, I find the show to be pretty introspective. You have these moments of just
I'd agree.
You have these
with
moments
that,
of just like silence where Jack is just crossing this landscape, or Jack is like facing some kind of internal battle. There's a moment in there's an episode in which Jack fights this clone of himself, basically like this evil version of himself
called Mad Jack.
Partway through, you just kind of get this visual as he's like fighting and raging against this version of himself, that you get this visual where it's like just a flaming tree, and this ominous atmospheric music plays as the camera, like, you know, camera in quotes, slowly zooms in on the tree.
Yeah, sure.
And it's like 30 seconds of zooming in on a tree that's on fire. and then it kind of changes to like a waterfall and like calm and stuff. And it's kind of symbolic of Jack's inner kind of struggle here. I just thought that was incredible. The fact that it's like
that
the
is,
show would,
yeah.
has the show is like patient compared to any other kid show.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it. It's just for like, sure, actually.
Okay, we're gonna wait and we're gonna let you soak in this moment and let you make you think about it because there's nothing else to think about. There's no fucking funny ass jokes to tell. It's just like you're gonna think about this flaming tree and what it means in terms of this battle of Jack between his rage self. And that's the kind of thing that I just thought was incredible about this show. And, you know, it just kind of leaves you moments to ponder about the world of the show, about like even just the landscapes and the quiet moments of Jack crossing this crazy landscape is just a moment to be like, what is this world like? It kind of lets your imagination run wild as you wait for Jack to cross this landscape.
Sure. It's interesting that you say that, because I generally agree with a lot of what you're saying. But it's interesting, like, what do you think the difference is between, like, this and, say, I mean, maybe it's not the best example, but I feel like Dragon Ball Z is also a show that has a lot of really slow moments.
Sure.
And they're not quite as drawn out, but what do you think the difference is between this and that necessarily? Because I guess I'm just trying to consider myself, like, because it never feels like padding in the show.
So in Dragon Ball Z, I think a lot of the times where, specifically when it's like panning over landscapes and stuff like that, a lot of it is so uniform that it's
yeah, that's
yeah,
definitely
it doesn't
true.
Give you, it's not thought-provoking at all. It's not, you know, you're seeing...
And there's not much of a sense of place.
Yeah, it's
either,
just like,
really.
Okay, like, I know we're on Namek. I know it's the same Namek landscape as everything else. Or I know we're on Earth. It's the same, like, barren Earth wasteland that they always fight in. Like, you see it and you know, like, what it is exactly. And there's nothing really to ponder about. You're just kind of waiting for the next scene of dialogue or fighting or both. In that sense, it kind of lacks... There's something that it lacks. I guess maybe the introspective aspect I was talking about, where you're kind of free to fill in the blanks of the world with your own imagination. Mm-hmm. And then this is just like, since everything is the fucking same, it's like, okay, like I know I'm seeing the same shit again.
I think that you're probably right there. I think there's also an element, for me anyway, of just the fact that this show takes a lot of, I mean, as we were saying at the beginning, it takes a lot from classic movies and like 1970s movies and movies made in the 40s and 30s. And it just has a visual style that I feel like a lot of other animated shows lack. I probably already said that, but I think it bears repeating that, like, you know, again, a high, like, wide angle shot of Jack, small, diminutive, looking down on him as he crosses this area. It's quite a bit different than, say, a similar shot in Dragon Ball Z, where it would be like, you know, camera close to the ground, you know, all of this is in quotes, obviously, because it's not a physical space, but, you know, camera close to the ground, you're kind of looking up at the characters, you're kind of panning along basically a static background that's the same sort of thing that you're used to seeing, like you were saying. Like, I think it's a combination of the very distinctive sense of place that Samurai Jack has, while also being just this sense of, like, cinema, or the sense of being very cinematic in a way that I think a lot of cartoons
aren't. Well, I think you're totally right with that. Like, compare that shit to... compare that shit even to Dexter's Lab. Compare that shit to fucking Family Guy. Or even The Simpsons. It's just like...
Or The Simpsons, even. Just, like, a show that takes so many cues from cinema.
But it's still... Like, it's just like... most of the time, it's just characters on the same plane. Like, it's like a fucking side-scrolling video game. It's like the same size and the same plane
to be
moving
fair,
around. And it's like... In this show, I think they take the effort to... show Jack from all these different angles, show all this sort of things happening from different angles and with interesting cuts too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to be fair, comparing this to, say, The Simpsons or Family Guy isn't quite fair, just because those are technically just animated sitcoms. Sure. And, you know, like, a sitcom is shot very differently from, like, an action show.
Yeah, sitcom's another thing that's very consistent, especially multi-camera stuff.
Yeah, right. I mean, even single-camera stuff is still kind of, you know, there's a formula to it, certainly. Actually, that might be something about this show that's really quite interesting, is that it feels like it's shot like a movie. Mm. And it doesn't feel like it's shot like pretty much any other cartoon. I'm kind of just saying what you just said.
No, but I'm hearing you.
But, like, it's shot like an action movie. It's shot like Kill Bill, actually. That's a perfect example. It feels like there's this creativity to the angles and just the way things are framed. Yeah, no, I think that's a good example. I think it's similar to Kill Bill in a way. Perhaps, or Tarantino movies in general are usually framed kind of differently or creatively. Yeah. I may be just talking out of my ass at this point, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, of course, I agree with a lot of what you said. This show is totally beautiful, as I've said. I do feel that it's pretty introspective. One of the things I want to highlight that I found really interesting about this show is that as I said just a moment ago, the sense of place is very strong. But also, one of the huge benefits of setting this show in a future that is so far removed from anything that we know is that it allows this complete, total, like, blank canvas to work with. And you can have one episode where they're, you know, Jack is in this city fighting off robot mobsters.
Yeah.
And in the next episode, or, you know, the previous episode, have him attacking a medieval tower that's guarded by archers that are just like demons.
Yeah, right.
There is a variety of places that he goes that feels, again, quite different from a lot of what we've watched. I mean, to be fair, a lot of the anime we've watched kind of just takes place in Tokyo. They don't really go elsewhere. And, you know, Tokyo, maybe they don't say it in the dub, but, sure, you know, it's clearly that's where it is. And therefore, everything kind of starts to look the same. Whereas with this, every episode has such a different visual appeal. You have just tropes from everywhere kind of taken in, and you can just do whatever you want with them because there's no reality that this is set against. It's just this future world. So, you know, whatever, have a bunch of talking dogs, have like robot whatever you want, have a crazy babbling pig sheriff. None of it feels out of place. Because it's so varied in a way that I feel like a lot of things aren't. Even things that are, like, galaxy-spanning. Like, frankly, individual planets on Star Wars, for example, sure, they have a different environment, but, like, the structures are the same. The technology level is the same.
Even on Star Trek.
There's not a lot different there.
Even in Star Trek, like, you get, you know, different planets where the culture's different, maybe the technology is different, probably is, but ultimately it's always just like the same kind of human problems and the same standard form of action where it's just like someone points a laser and fires it and that's it.
All right, I guess I see what you're saying. But when I was thinking about this, it made me think kind of strangely of Warhammer 40K. Really? Which is the thing that I was really into as, like, a teenager. And one of the reasons that I got into it is because I really liked this idea of a future set so far, you know, from anything that we know, that, like, you can't really even view it through a modern lens. Like, there's nothing to really compare it to. And as a result, you have pretty much complete freedom to do whatever. Like, there's a section in the third edition rulebook of Warhammer 40K that Yeah, I know. I'm making a fucking podcast where we're talking about Samurai Jack, and we've been recording for over an hour,
we're
Peter.
Not nerdy, but you are.
Like, I am a nerd. So anyway, in this thing, it's, you know, it just has these descriptions, and then like just a thumbnail-sized image of various planets in the galaxy-spanning empire of the universe. And one of those planets is explicitly described as a world that hasn't really gotten past the like feudal stage of technological development. And then there are planets where, you know, it's just like tribesmen. And there's something about that to me that was just so striking, of these things can exist in this universe simultaneously and look so different and feel so different, but there's like a unifying theme or a unifying style. And Samurai Jack to me is that exactly. You have so many disparate elements, but because there's this unifying style of animation and I guess world building to an extent, it all fits together and nothing seems out of place. Even when Jack, you know, runs into, you know, gets off of a Viking ship and drives a little like dinghy with an electric motor, but still has a like dragon head on the front of it. Away from the ship. I don't know. There's something consistent, but also inconsistent about it that I really love.
That makes sense,
And it's also, not to keep going on and on about this, but it's kind of like late stuff in the DCAU when they start getting weird and going through the just kind of weird crap that's part of the DC universe. Like the Skartaris, the underground world at the center of the earth where it's all medieval.
Okay.
It's like, all right, yeah, fuck it. Like, have Batman in medieval times. Have them go back to the old west, and there's like, you know, there's mechs and stuff. Whatever. I'm cool with it. If it looks right, then I'm okay with it, even if it's really weird. Because I don't know, I like weird stuff.
Well, I think we can agree this show is fucking fantastic so far.
Yeah, no, it's great so far. Season one is definitely worth your time. It's all on AdultSwim.com. Without ads. It doesn't have ads.
It's at AdultSwim.com/videos/Samurai-Jack. There you go. You got it.
We should probably talk about the bet.
You bet.
So we have a couple options here. Personally, I think it might be interesting to do. They do like this very specific triple split screen thing a lot, where they'll show progressively closer close ups of like Jack's sword thrusting through the air
in
split screen. They do that a lot. I think it might be interesting because you have number of robots destroyed in an episode, and that seems much like Leo's being destroyed, except quite possibly
even taking
worse.
It per episode, it's probably too much to count. They kill a lot of robots.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I couldn't have counted the number of robots killed in that Viking episode.
Oh,
it must be hundreds.
I'm down with your idea.
Yeah, okay, cool. So let's do that. I guess I'll say like four times in an episode.
Are you doing
the
per
triple
episode?
Split screen? I'm doing in one episode, like most in one episode. That's how we tend to do it.
I mean, yeah, for the, like the super common stuff.
This is pretty common.
I know, I would have preferred to do it the other way. Yeah. Okay. Okay, I'll do it six times in an episode.
All right. Cool. Well, I'm excited to see what the result of that is, especially since there's actually a fair number of bets that we'll have in this block of episodes. In order to decide the next thing, unlike, say, Yu Yu Hakusho, where it was like, one bet,
right.
All right.
Well, shit, what are we watching for next week's minisode?
So we are, I think, going to watch Castle of Cagliostro, the 1979 Lupin the Third movie, directed by Hayao Miyazaki.
His directorial debut. Feature film.
Yes, the extremely well-known Studio Ghibli
Yeah, I had no idea. I've seen this film, and I love it. And I had no idea it was 1979. That seems like before Nausicaa. Yeah.
I believe, is on Netflix, or it's on Amazon Prime, if you are interested in that, dear listener.
And the week after that, we will, of course, be watching Samurai Jack Season 2. That's episodes 14 through 26.
Yeah, and obviously I'm excited about that because, you know, this season was fantastic, and I am curious to see the show evolve more, I guess. So be sure to check in for that stuff. But until then, I'm Michael Doak.
And until then, I'm still Peter Eby.
And this has been Hyperspace Broadcast. Hey there. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to access more of our content, follow us over at facebook.com/HBpod and Twitter @HBpod, where we post all of our episodes, as well as additional content related to what we've been watching, typically clips. This is also a great way to get in contact with us, of course. Subscribing on iTunes is also a surefire way to stay up to date, and while you're there, consider leaving us a review. Thanks again for listening, and we will talk at you next week.